X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
To you live and direct from my subterranean lair. My name is Ra, and I'm here to awaken the dormant particles that are spiraling inside your DNA. So come with me as we go further down the mystical spiral of life. It's Spiral Radio, where each and every week we unveil the different shades of you, the different shades of me, until we all vibrate the same frequency. And like always, I've been scouring the earth for the best guests in the paranormal and supernatural, esoteric, occult subjects on the planet. And we have friend of the show. He's been here once before last year. And he is an amazing film director and creator. He's been immersed in the supernatural and the occult since birth. And he's my buddy, Christopher Garitano. He owns White Phosphorus Pictures. You can find him. Actually, I'm not sure if it's still the same website, so Christopher will tell you in a second. But you can also find him on a new up-and-coming series on the History Channel called Dark Files. You know, we want to welcome here to Spiral Radio a friend of our show. And we got a Pisces moon out, and it's a beautiful night. And I want to welcome Christopher back again. Welcome, Christopher. How's it going?
Oh, it's going good. Thank you, Ra. Thanks for having me back, brother.
Yeah, it's great to have you. And, you know, it's been, I think, maybe 7-8 months since we talked to you or something like that. And a lot has happened for you. A lot has happened for me as well. And, you know, this hour is just going to fly by. So I would really love to, if just to start off with, if people aren't familiar with who you are, then maybe you could just tell them a little bit about how you came to make The Dark Files and this new upcoming series. And how, you know, it basically is like this show Stranger Things, that with the Netflix hit series Stranger Things, that was based on basically true events from like the Montauk Project and MK Ultra and different, you know, covert programs that led you to making the Montauk Chronicles, and how this ended up being like where Stranger Things basically got their material, and how they were even going to be called Montauk at one time, right?
Yeah, that's 100% true, and you can trace back the provenance basically by just searching, the origins of the show Stranger Things and where it originally began. Myself, I'm a filmmaker and an artist, and I grew up in New York, and I went to film school in New York, and currently not living in New York at the moment, but I made a movie, and it was about independent horror movie makers. And while I was making that film, I met a guy who knew my next movie was going to be a docudrama regarding, you know, cryptozoological subject matter, because I was really just heavily interested in the Bigfoot tales since I was a kid. So
a whole series, man. So I'm really excited to have you here. Like, yeah.
Oh, thanks,
like,
brother.
You know, back again, because like it's we have the almost the same age, and we're almost the same growing up and toys we played with when we were kids, and we have such a similar background and connection that I'm really excited to see what happens in this chat.
Yeah, man. I think about that, because there's very few people that I meet that are like us that had that particular combination at that time. You know, I mean, like when it was in vogue, people got into horror films and people got into fantasy stuff. But I think there are a few like us that were really into all of those things at once at that particular time. So it's, you know, it's during your formative years, and it creates a certain type of personality, especially when you're immersed deeply in imagination so much as a kid. And I was. And so it's like, oh, that's, you know, that's my Garden of Eden. I go back there a lot, and obviously evolved over the years and changed. But
because if you think about it, like all those shows and all those toys, they were like implanted truths, you know, sort of like things that are coming to the surface now. You know, they're talking about cosmic wars, Star Wars. They're talking about different humanoids and different beings that are like conducting us like an orchestra in some astral realm, you know, and these are things that we encountered in different stories and different toys when we were younger. And now we're realizing that this is part reality. And this is really what's going on. And just our physical plane is kind of the fake. And this actually, our soul time and our dream time is actually our reality and the truth and who we really are.
Well, that's, you know, that's, you hit the nail right on the head, because when I started making Montauk, it was a total paradigm shift, because I had, you know, up until that point, I just reveled in the fiction of it all and loved the whole fantasy world. And then you run into, you know, two elderly men, Preston Nichols and Al Bielek, who are now telling me everything I learned in science fiction and horror and fantasy and all the things I loved growing up are true. So it was very different than, you know, my normal exploration into the world of the unknown up until that point, because Montauk was quite detrimental researching it. It was, I had nightmares and anxieties, a lot of issues, and then met people that I felt were quite a detriment too, because, in short, this stuff really messes with your head, and it brings along some good people, of course, I met along the way. But then there are other types that are, you know, true predators that are really trying to manipulate people for their own gain.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting you say that, because like I feel that it's sort of like we're being conducted like an orchestra, you know, sort of like that. And, you know, the way you even made that Montauk Chronicles film was like sort of like a docu-film. Like you were making a documentary, but you were telling a story, and it's a hard story to tell. I mean, it's the way you get immersed in it. It changes you. The only way to do it is by changing your life and becoming part of it, to do it the right way. And the way you basically spent 10 years of your life making this film, I mean, it's showing you how it's paying off now. I mean, I knew somehow it would click something for you, and you know, now it's leading to you getting a History Channel show, and I feel that those 10 years were like a battle for your soul. You know, you were like awakening something in your DNA, you know, becoming a new you, you know, and now you're starting to grow.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, I feel that it was quite a long journey and quite a battle even to, you know, 'cause there were other companies that had interest in doing something with me on this particular subject. And for whatever reason, it just wasn't working out. But this particular show, The Dark Files, was basically in development for 2 years before it came to fruition, you know, completely.
Now you're worldwide, man. You were just making like a, you know, something about Long Island, and now the whole world is going to know, you know, like
Yeah. But you know what? I'm prepared for it at this time. It's like maybe when I was a little younger, I wouldn't have been, but I certainly am now. And the idea now is to just work, be inspired from the source of being inspired in every way, but then work as hard as I can to bring something fresh for the audience, you know, and bring something new, or revisiting topics that have never been displayed correctly, in my opinion, and then, you know, show people these things the way they should be displayed. So that's what I'm working on, you know?
Yeah. So people that might be listening right now, Christopher, that might not know what the Montauk Project was, or have only seen maybe Stranger Things on Netflix, or have not really even heard of your films or these topics, for maybe like a minute or two or a couple minutes, can you basically tell them exactly what Camp Hero was and what it became, and what the Montauk Project focused on, and how you ended up meeting, and maybe what you discovered about the certain people involved that you interviewed, and how that changed your life as well?
Of course. So I had completed my first film. It was called Horror Business, and I ran into a guy who had an interest in this particular subject matter, the Montauk Project. Now, what that was an alleged situation that happened from 1971 to 1983 in the Camp Hero Air Force Station, which is located on the furthest eastern tip of Long Island, New York. And it's kind of in a remote area. In the summertime, it's actually a very happening place. It's beach resorts and, you know, it's very crowded and it's very difficult to even get in there with traffic. But in the winter, it's quite desolate. And especially back then, nobody was there in the winter. So 5 miles from town, in the middle of the woods, there's this giant radar tower. It's called the SAGE radar tower, standing for semi-automatic ground environment. And that was born out of, you know, World War II, a little bit later. It was created to detect incoming ships in the enemy and to communicate. And this was before satellite technology was implemented. And so this is what they had and this is what they used. Now, in short, there's several gentlemen who claim that after World War II, there was something, and this is truth now, so the claim that has not been able to have been proven at this time is derived from some truth. We had something in our government called Operation Paperclip, or Project Paperclip, where we inherited Nazi scientists.
I'm glad you went there.
Okay, so this is the origins of the Montauk Project. So the gentlemen say that brought this story out into the world. And so we absorbed several Nazi scientists for a variety of things, designing rockets, designing technologies. But these guys, if you do your research, were some pretty evil dudes. We basically gave them a pass during the Nuremberg trials and absorbed them here into our government and used them. And the excuse was basically they're spoils of war. And, you know, if we didn't take them, the Russians would get them, whatever. And so what I'm, that's great. Nice excuse. And that's the one that was thrown out into the public. But these guys, if you do your research on some of these gentlemen that were absorbed and basically made into heroes to develop new technologies, these are some pretty evil dudes. They did some really bad things. So we took those guys, set them up, and then use their brains and their imagination to create a variety of things. So the gentlemen that say the Montauk Project happened said that it's these same guys that were the Project Paperclip scientists that were the foundation of the so-called Montauk Project. Now, a little further east from the Camp Hero Air Force Station is a place called Brookhaven National Labs. It does exist. It's a real place. There's some other weird mysteries hanging around it. But they say that
they have a collider there, too. You know that?
Oh, yeah. Smaller version of of what we know. But, yeah, it's So these scientists were there working, and apparently there is a underground transportation system that goes from Brookhaven Labs to the Camp Hero Air Force Station, the base under the ground. And this is where a gentleman named Preston Nichols said that he was first recruited. He was working for Brookhaven Labs, and that they felt it was time and that he was ready to be absorbed into this clandestine operation that was occurring underneath Camp Hero. Now, there were other people there too, Alfred Bielek, Duncan Cameron. And then later on, a guy named Stuart Swerdlow said he was part of it as well, and I'll explain what he was to the project, or what he claims he was. And so, essentially, what these guys were doing, they were recruiting human subjects, but they weren't just recruiting them legally. They were kidnapping kids, runaway kids, kids who were into drugs, kids who were into crime and prostitution, boys. And they would capture these boys and bring them down into the facility underneath Camp Hero and conduct the most brutal tortures and beatings and rapes and drug-induced hallucinations, to the point where their personalities were completely obliterated. There was nothing left. And the reason for this, right, so they snap the mind, they fracture the mind, and now they are susceptible to what they called programming. So they would implement this programming into the subconscious. They would bring them to this horrible state of fear, the most extreme state of fear, and this would be the time where the suggestion would be planted, plus the programming, the reason. And so there were a lot of reasons for doing this. The gentleman claimed it was everything from heightening psychic abilities, making these guys have, like, you know, X-Men type abilities, extraordinary psychic abilities, not just remote viewing and things like that. And also, they would be used for Manchurian type assassination missions, something that they could use a symbol, a word, a device, whatever, that would trigger them later on a date and time that they needed them to kill somebody. And so that's where these kids, and also the kids were being used as guinea pigs for a variety of other experiments, and they claim time travel was down there. And they say that a lot of the technology was alien technology. It was an exchange program. The extraterrestrials of all kinds would give us plans and ideas that we could reverse engineer and create our own out of, in exchange for, I guess, human subjects of their own.
Let me stop you right there. Sure. I want to talk to you about that at that point. So, I go way back on this with you as well, and I know some of the people that's been in a project and I'm somewhat connected in a way to some of these stories, and I think that most of this technology that they were working with wasn't extraterrestrial, but most likely inner Earth technology. That's what I'm going towards, or interdimensional. I don't think it's per se from another planet. I think it might be from, like, inner Earth, Christopher. I really
could
do.
I think that
the Nazi Vril, that these psychic mediums, they might have had some contact with what we call Agartha, or this inner Earth, this tube, possibly like a tube that's going pole to pole, some hollow Earth-like tube that has crystal caverns and maybe some interdimensional time gates and all this technology down there that maybe has never been erased. Like, we have extinction events up here. You know, we have cataclysms, you know, where we have to restart. Maybe inside inner Earth, they've never restarted. That they've had technology for hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of years down there, that's never been erased, where they have these flying machines that Admiral Byrd possibly has seen, and these Nazis probably contacted this inner Earth somehow, you know, through Antarctica or through whatever, and that's where they get these flying machines from World War II, and probably where these scientists got that technology from. And I think that's maybe where this Montauk chair might have came from too. I'm wondering what you feel about that.
It could be, you know, I mean, I can't, it's so hard to get the information on this. The interdimensional thing I do believe in, and quantum physics, on a minute scale, is kind of, you know,
it's hand in hand. I think it's maybe extraterrestrial beings using interdimensional technology. You know, like they're traveling through dimensions or through some kind of interdimensional gateway, but they may be from some off-planet origin. You know what I mean?
I do. No, I it's possible. I believe it's possible. The thing that I was focused on the most is, and the thing that burns me deep inside that really gets me angry.
The
reason why I've stuck with this all these years, because I feel like if we can prove that this happened, then we could start getting to the other stuff. And
you need some tangible evidence,
right,
some skeletons, some actual something, yeah.
Well, because I do believe that there were kids being kidnapped, and I do believe that they were absorbed into this program, and pretty, most likely a lot of them died. And because this has been done before. You know, look up Holmesburg Prison. Look up MK Ultra. You know, these things have happened. These people did these things. You know, our governments have conducted experiments where they really screwed people over. Look up the Tuskegee medical experiments. You know,
yeah.
Where they were injecting these poor guys with syphilis, unbeknownst to them. And you know,
it's African Americans, right? The African.
Yeah. And they gave these guys syphilis, yeah. And these guys passed it on to their wives and their kids, and they were dying from this horrible disease, and they just thought they were getting free medical care. So
yeah,
there's some really brutal, vicious, ogreish stuff going on within the government. So if we know that that's possible, then we know that this is possible. And so you can't dismiss, and you can't, I'd say as an investigator, you cannot begin and say, well, all of the alien stuff and all of the interdimensional stuff is BS, so, yeah, you know, I'm not going to explore this. Well, that's a mistake, because now you're buying into the web that was set for you. You just bit on that trap with glee, you know? Like, and so in my cases, I know there's disinformation in just about every lie, so I'm going to be like, and I'm going to go forward on my own, and I'm going to look into it, especially when there's a possibility, even if it's a grain of sand on a beach. If I still want to look into it, and I spent 10 years of my life looking into this, and I truly feel with the Dark Files, and again, this isn't, I'm a happy man, because I'm going to die one day. I'm aware of that, and I want this ride on this planet to be the most genuine possible. So if I was part of a program or a show where it was all scripted, I would feel sick to my stomach and I wouldn't even want to talk about it. And I was lucky enough to be part of something the first time doing a television show, to be part of something that was genuine and that we actually found something. So, you know, you'll make the judgment call at the end as to exactly what we found. I feel like we found the most significant form of proof, or at least a strong lead.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, for sure.
You're teasing me.
Yeah, I can't tell you what it is. I could tell you, you know, off the record, but but you'll find out on the 23rd. You know,
yeah. No, really, you were giving me a little hint earlier when we talked on the phone.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. No, I'm excited, and the world's going to be excited to, and everybody is in for a big treat.
I think so. I really trust this situation, and I also feel like this episode will spark the brain for the person that's going to find it, you know, or the people that will find it, really find it and really prove it. And you have
to. You need to speak for all the souls that might have been lost, you know. That's what
I feel irresistibly compelled to do that. I have to. I have to do it, you know, just in case. I mean, just in case, you know, it really did happen. I can't just turn my back on it. So,
yeah, you know, what I'm interested in hearing about? I was watching some of your clips. And you mentioned something about a 1982 Psychotronics meeting with Preston Nichols in it. You know what I'm talking about?
I do. Yeah.
Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. We met this great woman, Doreen Bachman, who, when she was a young lady, she kind of stumbled upon this thing with a friend. And it was ran by Preston Nichols. He was the head of the group. And this was kind of like a little group that would meet in and out of New York City, in the suburbs, in secret meetings. And they would talk all things metaphysical, supernatural, you know, paranormal, and things that went on at these secret government projects. And Nichols would talk about the technologies that he developed and learned at Montauk. Now, here's the thing. At one of those meetings that Doreen was at, and you'll see it discussed in the show, is that Preston broke out a machine that basically changed the weather in the room, the temperature, abruptly, to a point where it really made an impact on her. This wasn't just, you know, someone turning up down the thermostat. This was a huge difference and an instantaneous difference. But here's the thing. It's like, I know a lot of people want to see Preston Nichols demonstrate something, right? And I think it would be quite absurd and presumptuous to think he can just break out a time machine, you know, and pull it out of the closet and just demonstrate it for you, even if he knew how to do it at Camp Hero. But now here's the thing. Think about the amount of preparation that goes into a rocket launch or a space shuttle launch. We're talking years that go into one launch, okay? Millions and millions of dollars. So think about what would go into a time travel experiment, probably triple that, you know, or quadruple that, or infinitely more. And so to think that you can go up to Preston's home and say, well, why don't you just demonstrate a time travel experiment? It's quite moronic to think that that's going to happen. Even if you, you know, if he really does know this stuff, you have to understand that a large amount of money goes into something like that. Yeah. Even if he has like the knowledge to operate
it. So many people like that too.
Yeah. So I wouldn't go there, but I would just let the guy speak and make him comfortable enough to reveal more, because I think the more, from my experience interviewing Preston Nichols, the more comfortable he is, the more he tells you, and the more lucid he is. Yeah. Like, he's a little wacky in the beginning of the interviews I've conducted with him. But if you make him feel comfortable and you make him feel like you're a friend, he will open up and tell you more. More details will come out. And that was my experience with him. So for anybody that goes to Preston in the future, and again, he's, you know, he's in his, he's not doing well. He's getting older. So if you go there and you go to speak with him, be kind, be polite, regardless of how you feel about the environment. And the man may open up to you, and he might tell you things that he might not tell other people. It's just the way it goes.
Yeah, you know, we have 3 minutes to break, so we'll pick it up when we do come back if we run out of time. But I wanted to get into this a little bit too. And, you know, because I know a lot about this man as well. And, you know, I've never met him in person, but I have close friends that have met him. Maybe a dozen people I know pretty close have met him and been around him really close. And, you know, what people don't realize, Christopher, is that what these guys are doing, they're just amplifying witchcraft, okay? They're amplifying soul technology. They're amplifying psychic capabilities, sigils, thought forms with electronics, okay? They're using a form of witchcraft. It's a form of being a dark shaman. And they are casting spells on people in a way. And, you know, he is using and sucking the life force out of people like a vampiric consumption of their soul energy, you know. And this man is a wicked man, regardless of what he knows, what he says to somebody. He's a wicked, tortured soul, and he has not only molested boys, he's probably helped kill them and abduct them, and he, you know, will admit it.
And, he's admitted to it. And he said, if you remember in my picture, when I asked him, "What, you know, do you regret this?" He's like, "No, I would go back and do it." But he also said he would go back and do it all over again. So that's a lot to think about.
And then at one point he started screaming at you, saying, "You know, what would you do if people had guns pointing at you? What would you do?" You know what I would do, Christopher? I wouldn't kill babies. I would take the bullet. I don't care what guy or what person is pointing a gun at me. It wouldn't make me kill a child, it wouldn't make me abduct a child, and it wouldn't make me molest a child.
Correct.
So, and I'm, I don't know what he's yelling at himself in that picture,
right? But but my job as a movie maker was to get information out of him for the audience, and the best way to do that is to make him feel comfortable, so he opens up and he says
You did your job. Sure. But before I'm going to leave it with this before we go to break. What the people that watch Netflix and Stranger Things and shows like this, what they fail to realize is that they leave out the molestation. They leave out all this wicked, tortured experiments that really take place, and they put in these cool little pictures of like supernatural things and people floating in tanks and all this stuff, thinking that it's all fun psychic powers and stuff. But they fail to mention about the kids dying and getting molested and you know, getting, you know, all these horrible acts that are get done. They don't talk about that, you know.
Well, we do in the Dark Files.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. They don't talk about, they fail, Stranger Things fail to leave all that out, you know. But you bring the real. And for everybody that wants to research you on break, where can they find you, Christopher?
You can find me out there on social networks and Facebook, Instagram, all that jazz. Or go to my website at montaukchronicles.com.
And you can find Spiral Radio at themysticalspiral.com. This song is called Movie Star Fix by Analog Driver. We'll be back right after this and Spiral out.
Para X.
And we're back. And we are coming to you with the best paranormal discussions from here to the Kuiper Belt. And we got Christopher Garitano here from MontaukChronicles.com. And that song was called Movie Star Fix, written by my buddy Ricky and Analog Driver. And you can find them on Reverb Nation and SoundCloud and all that stuff. So let's pick it up right where we left off, Christopher, because, you know, I'm really excited to have you here. And I'm excited for you with this new Dark File series and excited for the new discoveries you've made. And, you know, we left off talking about Preston Nichols and how basically what he's doing is amplifying soul technologies, like basically like a witchcraft. You know, they're using thought forms and psychic capabilities, and they're amplifying them with electronics. And it's a like being a dark shaman of sorts. And you know, he basically is still up to those same ways, you know, and he's older now. So he's at the end of his life, but, you know, his goal when he meets men especially is to usually have them undress and hook them up to this machine, this wall of receivers that he has. And he tries to talk them into, we have to keep this PG because, you know, it's a family network, but he'll talk someone into having an orgasm, hook them up to these receivers and ride those waves of the mind that come out. And, you know, to me, this is horrific, you know, and I don't know if I understand it from a scientific point of way, sort of, but it doesn't end there. It gets way worse, especially what they were doing to some of these boys. And I'm interested in hearing when you encountered him, if any of this came up, if you got wind of any of this, if you smelt any of this, you know what I mean?
Well, you know, he suggested that somebody get in the chair and take their clothes off, but we simply all just said no. And that was that. You know, like he wasn't being forceful about it. I wasn't about to do that, you know, especially after reading what I read. And, you know, I mean, I have an open mind, but the minute someone asks you to take the clothes off, that's when you have to question the situation. You can't, you know, and I've read and have met people that have been duped into things. And I feel bad that they were, because they trusted these people. But you just can't say yes when something like that's involved. They're going to try and convince you it's, you know, it's like a medical procedure. It's this, it's that. You can't listen. You can't listen because
and, you know, I
think there's a different intent behind it when sexuality comes into play. And you just can't let someone take advantage of you like that, you know.
And so, I think it's even deeper than that too as well. I think that when your mind and psychically – you're opened up in this way, that you open yourself up to this holographic universe out there, and somehow you're making some kind of like soul contract agreement, or some kind of something is getting imprinted on your soul. It's not just a one-off and you just do this little experiment. I really think that it somehow gets imprinted on you and it gets interweaved with your mind in some kind of
program. Certainly does, even if it's in its purest form of a memory. So, no, I do believe it has an effect. I do believe that there are many forms of witchcraft, and the most powerful, you know, warlocks can do it in thought, you know. But spells and prayer and everything, it can be seen as a form of magic, okay? It just is. That's what it is.
Which is like technology, yeah.
Correct, like, correct. So, yeah, I mean, and again, up until the point where I encountered the whole Montauk situation, or was encountered by it, it was all in fiction. You know, like, this is H.P. Lovecraft stuff. This is Stephen King stuff. This isn't real. And then I meet Al Bielek, and he's telling me it's real. Then I meet Preston Nichols, and I'm around all this crazy stuff. And it's like, you know, so I do believe. And, you know, then you start to do your research, and you realize our governments have experimented with the same stuff. And if you don't believe that that's true, you're just not doing your research. It's out there. A lot of this stuff is out there. Follow the trail. You can find out that some of the most brilliant minds have kind of dabbled in, at least dabbled in this. You can find the official note on it. So it's real. And I don't know. You just have to be really careful, because now you're not playing on a fantasy playground anymore. You know, you're in a real situation around people who might not see themselves as villains. Others know there are villains. They don't care. And you can be a victim to that. So you can't just walk in with open arms because of your love for the strange and unusual. You know, you have to be very careful. And I always am. You know, I make very sober decisions in my life these days. And I'm not about to walk into some stranger's home and let him, you know, touch me and go. And it's just like, it's just never going to happen. So, you know, you just have to have that. I think you have to have a very solid will to be around people who are trying to manipulate your will, if you know you're going to be around people like that.
Yeah. And I mean, think about it. We're talking about how he was doing these psychotronics meetings in 1982. So he probably started way before that. So think about now, 2017, how many lives that he's manipulated somebody's mind or done something.
It's not just him. Yeah. There are others involved in this situation that has done that and worse. Yeah.
And you know what? That leaves us to the next person that was in this your film, and this Stuart Swerdlow guy. And I don't know if does he have anything to do with the Dark Files at all?
He's in it. Yeah.
Yeah. He's part of it as well. So he. Yeah.
But not, you know, again, this is an examination and an investigation. So Preston Nichols is also in it, and as somebody that we visited and talked to, simply just tried to talk to. And again, these guys are putting these stories out there.
This is a whole new investigation.
Brand new.
From your Montauk Chronicles.
Okay. Yeah, this is, it's an unofficial follow-up to Montauk Chronicles. So if you saw Montauk, this is the continuation of my investigation. I do have, I brought in two very interesting gentlemen into the situation that I'm not really allowed to name yet, because I think they want to wait for the big press release from history to kind of reveal the details of the show. But I basically have two co-hosts, and they're joining me, and they each have their speciality and expertise. And I think you'll be impressed at these guys.
So you actually spent some time at the Swerdlow's home. You know,
well, over the years, when you're making a movie about somebody, you know, you can't. I can't walk into someone's home like a bull in a china shop. That is not technique. And so I am naturally kind and friendly to everyone I come across, even if sometimes I disagree with how they are in life. Doesn't mean I'm going to adopt those qualities. So when I'm in someone's home and they say, "Well, we'd like to talk to you for our podcast," or I'm there to interview them, I'm going to be polite. No one's going to switch.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So, but, you know, sometimes people wear out their welcome with me. And yeah. I'd say that happened here. And, you know, I'm not going to get into details. But some people are just a little too heavy. And there are a lot of manipulators out there, man. And there's only so much I can put up with, especially when it starts to affect my life. And these people are deliberately trying to mess with my life. It's like, I'm not a guy to be messed with. If, you know, don't mistake my kindness for weakness. I am kind because that is my foundation. But you know, it's the wrong thing to do is to start messing with me. And in this case, you got to be very careful, because if you're around manipulative people, eventually they're going to try and put that stuff on you. So I would say do not get too close to people like that if you're investigating, even if, as nature has it, you're friendly with them for a certain amount of time. Don't get too close, because they're going to look into your life. They're going to do it.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't know. You know, I over the years I've learned a lot about him, you know, through just him being around in the same circles and, you know, different things. And, you know, I'm very intuitive, and I come from a long line of people that have intuitive capabilities and psychic powers and all this stuff. So I can read somebody pretty much like a book sometimes, especially the kind of life I've had when I'm around somebody, or I could see the way they carry themselves, or just when they speak. It appears to me really quickly who someone is, and I really don't feel like he's very much psychic. I feel like he gets a lot of his information from somewhere else, and I don't know how someone goes from being part of being tortured and being a handler to going to be a metaphysical healer. Okay.
So yeah, like, I would say trust your instinct, use your discretion.
Yeah.
For
like
sure.
All of a sudden you're known for getting tortured in the bottom of a basement, you know, in the bowels of Camp Hero. And you go from being you know, this guy that was the victim, and now you're healing the world.
Yeah, I would put a caveat out there for anyone that is seeking assistance from, because there are some good people out there, and there are some genuine people that will work with you and help. Yeah. One of which I think is a man named Alejandro Jodorowsky, or Jodorowsky, however you choose to pronounce his name. And he's an amazing human being.
Bless you.
an artist, a filmmaker. I've been following his work. And again, I don't follow anybody, but just following him paying attention to what he puts out in the world, and really loving what he has to say. And okay, so for instance, with his tarot readings, right? He reads the tarot. He does it for free in this place in France. This man does it for free, and he also doesn't predict the future. What he does is his method of, it's the Tower of Marseille, and it's the same one I study, is that it's a reflection on the present. So he's not telling you what's going to happen in the future. He's basically saying, this is you now.
Yeah. I like that.
It's really great. I mean, it's just endless amount of stuff. But if there's a book that he wrote called The Spiritual Journey of Alejandro Jodorowsky, and he's an amazing human being. And I think that's a guy, if you're going to learn about, and I never say follow anybody, but if you're going to learn about and you want to take some points from, that's a guy to do it. Out yeah. there in the world right now, there are people who are trying to snake every dollar off of you.
Yeah.
And not just that, but even worse, because they want to remove you from your family, and they will slowly do it, and they will do it with a smile, and you need to use your discretion and be careful. You can't just give everything to this person, because what they're doing is they're taking away your strength. And they're very evil people, the purest form of...
And they're using these mind control, not to cut you off, but they're using these mind control techniques that were used on them in Montauk Project. Maybe they're still doing it subconsciously, Christopher, and they don't even realize it. But, you know, these techniques, these sigils and thought forms and these... it's like an activation for the mind when certain symbols are used and certain, you know, sigils, they call them, or it's like a spell almost for the mind, you know. And they're being used in some of these metaphysical workers' logos and some of their, you know, daily lives and some of their businesses. And even like with the guy in your film, that was in Montauk, this guy we're talking about, Stuart Swerdlow. You know, I look at his expansions logo, and maybe he did it subconsciously. He didn't even realize it, but I don't believe in coincidences, you know, coincidences like that. But when, you know, he has the expansions logo, and it says expansions, and then there's the zero, the O, it has the dot in the middle, and then you have two winged lions on either side of expansions, and you got the purple logo in the background, the purple background, you know. And when choosing an astral familiar in witchcraft or whatever you want to call it, you know, in psychic astral travels, one pictures the violet background, right? You picture that violet background, and you picture an astral gateway, like an O. It's like a doorway. And you color the ring around the portal like purple, you know, just like in that logo. And then you choose a familiar, most likely a winged sphere or a winged beast, like a lion. So you choose a winged lion to carry out your tasks, to maybe get people to join your expansion website, to carry out your spell. and to carry out your target goal for your desired purpose. And you send that winged beast through the astral gateway, through that symbol on the logo, to get what your desired effect is, to get more subscribers, to get more people reading your books, to get more people, you know, feeding your beast so you can travel the world all year round, and you could do this and you could do that. You know, right in that logo is black magic or dark, you know, when you're manipulating somebody's will, you're sending out a thought form, some kind of astral familiar to do your bidding. And it's right there, and it is in the expansion's logo. I don't know if he realizes that, but I mean,
I would say he's fully aware of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's you're transmitting your psychic duties. You know, you're transmitting information through sigils, and you know, and your desired, you know, intentions, and you're sending out a symbolic magical effect for a desired end result. And that's manipulating somebody's will to get what you want. And when you place that sigil upon a person to be influenced, you'll transmit that to their mind. It gets in there and it's sealed. And it's some kind of seal. And you experience powers. And, you know, and your familiar gives you, you know, energy that it's accumulated from these people. And it's an exchange or some kind of vampiric exchange of energy.
And vampiric is the word. And so Here's the deal. If you're coming across somebody like this that are using these techniques, do not trust them. Do not follow their stuff. Be your own guide, number one. And then look to people who are not trying to take but are wanting to give. Because what happens is the people that are taking are throwing up the massive guilt trips on you that are making you seem like, oh, you're a responsible person if you're giving all your income to them. And listen, you can't listen to these people. Got to move on. You have your own strengths and you have your own mind, and you can be diligent enough to do your own research and use your discretion. And so you need to be very careful when approaching these people. I would never, ever meet with these people on any normal basis. I was a researcher making a picture. That is why I spent time around these people. I, you know, I've had encounters with witchcraft and different things since I was a kid. So it's like I've met people all my life that were into this. You got to be very careful. Very few of them are using this stuff for positivity. Yeah.
The best thing to be is to be your own best psychic. And if you're psychic, to teach somebody else to be their own best psychic.
Sure. If you have this life, this is your journey. You
can heal yourself.
Be part of a group, this group being led by someone who is trying to tell you how to think at every turn. Yeah. A counselor is a counselor. Choose your counselors wisely. You know, your wise men and your counselors should be elders, should be kind people who are not trying to take a damn thing from you.
So have you, in this new, is there anything new from this experience? Because we're going to have you back on to get into Bigfoot because we're already running out of time. So is there anything that maybe paranormal type event that did take place while you were in this new investigation, some kind of anything that you can, like, that happened off, you know, film, anything that you encountered that like really shook you to the core that I haven't heard of, or that
in regard to the dark files
in your all your recent, because we only have a few minutes left, so I'm wondering, you know, since the last time we talked, is there anything new that you could tell us that you've experienced that really shook you to the core and was like, whoa?
Oh, just the evidence that we keep finding, confirmations, things that we found that you'll see in the show. And then for me personally, I have revelations so much lately, so more frequently than I did in the past. So I'm, you know, looking back on things and reflecting and then moving forward and understanding things. It's a glorious time for that. I've had paranormal experiences here and there throughout my life, things that were certainly not ordinary. And they really did happen. So,
is there anything you found out on this Bigfoot journey that you've been on?
Well, it was one night we were out in the field. I met this guy named Joe Stewart, and he's in one of my little preview trailers that I put out. That I think it was an interesting experience. Like, we were deep in the wilderness out in northern Michigan, and you know, it was only three of us out there, and you know, it was dark and quiet, and we first heard coyotes leaving their den, which is, if anyone's ever heard that sound, it was just a really creepy, amazing sound, you know, energetic, howling and screaming. And then it got quiet again. And so Joe took us deeper into the woods. And yeah, I just had this feeling, you know, I had this just this feeling like, wow, this is actually could be real. This is a real thing. These things are might really be out here. And a little while later, we started. Now, this is deer hunting season, but it's cold. And nobody's
so you had
out
the
there.
Belief.
Yeah, all the hunters are back. They went back to the cabins, went back to their camps. So there's nobody out there. We really were in the middle of nowhere. So we hear this kind of owl call, right? But both Joe and I realized, because we both, you know, I mean, I had the best of both worlds. I grew up in the country and in the city, so I know what an owl sounds like. And that sounded like something making an owl call. Now, could it have been some guy hanging out in the middle of nowhere with us?
Yeah.
Possible. But I don't think so. And Joe insisted that sometimes they make these imitations. And it was a very eerie, spooky feeling. I have some footage of that moment, too. But I don't know if it's going to make it into the film. But one way or another, I'll put it out there. Because the film's very different now. I really am making this kind of ultimate history on the North American Sasquatch. So it's going to be a pretty thrilling picture. But I don't know if those moments will make it in. But one way or another, I'll put them out there so you can see it.
That would be cool. Was it high pitched to the where it couldn't almost be a human doing it? Like or something that was a little bit more than human?
Yeah, it just didn't. Like I've heard these barn owl calls, and I've never experienced one quite like this. It sounded like someone was using it to communicate with someone else, because one would come from a distance, and then it would come a little bit closer, and it sounded like it was coming from ground level, almost like they were sneaking up. You know, it was weird. Yeah. It was just strange.
It's interesting. It's interesting. That's interesting. And it's, you know, it's interesting too. We were talking about, you mentioned Duncan Cameron being one of the guys that was part of the Montauk Project and not one of the men that you featured in the film or probably in Dark Files, cause he's very secluded. But, I've had some contact with him a couple of months back, and, I felt like, through my impressions was that he was trying to do some kind of mind control thing on me. I don't even know if he was doing it, but he was trying to get me to go up with him to see Preston Nichols. And he was going to, you know, meet me and we were going to go up to see Preston together. And I ended up not going and meeting him, but, he left a series of voicemails that I still have saved to my phone where in the background you can hear like some kind of pulsing vibration, almost like some kind of technology is behind him talking. Very, you know, he's very charismatic, but very young-minded also. He talks like almost like a young boy, you know?
I know. Yeah, I talked to him not too long ago. We almost did an interview. We did an interview with Preston, an interview with Swerdlow, and you know, Al, of course, passed away in 2011, but you'll see some of my interview with him in the show as well. And, but, you know, in regard to Duncan, he just kind of got cold feet about the whole deal. I guess he was worried, maybe. And I think for the most part, these guys might be worried that something's going to be revealed because they try to keep their interactions quite isolated by people who are already accepting them. They won't go to somebody who might ask a few questions. You know, I am a different, I do ask harder questions than the normal guy, but I try to do it in the most polite way because I feel like, once again, keeping people comfortable is the best way to get them to reveal something. If you're just going for the throat right away in an interview, what's going to happen? Most likely the person's going to clam up, get nervous, and want to shut the interview down. And that's kind of what's going down when you don't just chill out for a moment and let these people speak. It's not for you. It's not about you as an interviewer. It's about the audience. The audience needs to experience something. And to get to that neutrality, you need to make the subject feel comfortable. And that's how I feel.
You can find Christopher Garitano at MontaukChronicles.com. You will find him on the History Channel on July. What is it, Christopher?
July 23rd, Sunday, July 23rd. It's a 2-hour special to start off the whole thing.
So you'll find it on July 23rd, Dark Files on the History Channel. You can check Christopher out on Facebook as well and on Twitter and on all social media. You can find me at themysticalspiral.com and Exploring the Ka on YouTube. Have a nice, safe night. I want to thank my producer, Sarge. I want to thank everybody in the chat room. Of course, Para X Radio, and everybody out there listening on the web. Say it with me, everybody. Spiral out.